Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionfuelandhydration.com. You can personalize your fueling and hydration strategy so you perform at your best with 15% off your first order of electrolytes and carbohydrate fuel with code OA23 at precisionfuelandhydration.com. Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Coach Rob Wilby, and I'm joined this week by our age group athlete, Jesse Hassel. Jesse, how are you today?
Hi, I'm really good, thanks.
It's really great you could join us. Jesse has just come back from Kona, so she's going to fill us in on the Kona experience. So I'm really excited to have you on and hear all about it, Jesse. But before we go on to hear your story, a couple of things. Every week we bring you an episode of this podcast to help motivate and inspire you. And I think your story, Jesse, today is really going to do that for people. There are so many people out there who dream of one day going to Kona. So to get someone like you on the show who's done it and who's been with us for a few years and get to tell the whole story, I think that's going to be awesome. For our listeners, if you do like this episode, a couple of things you could do for us, please. If you could just click like and subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts, or if you're watching on YouTube and you like the episode, click like and subscribe on there. It makes a massive, massive difference to how we get shown in front of people. And honestly, making this podcast is brilliant and I really love it. And if it can get shown to more people, then that's all we ask, that it helps more people out. And secondly, if you're looking for help and advice with your training, please get in touch. There's a link in the show notes, or you can email help@oxygenaddict.com and we can have a chat with you about your training. So, Jesse, welcome aboard. Kona, how exciting. Right, I want to kick this off. Sort of set the scene a little bit and go back as far back into the past as you need to. But what was it that originally made you want to go to Kona? What was the initial like seed that made you want to go there?
I think, when I decided to do my first Ironman, when I decided I wanted to do an Ironman and I did Austria 2 years ago, it's kind of like an escalation of craziness, isn't it? That you join a tri club and then everyone's talking about, oh, but what about Kona? And then there's usually like one person who's been to Kona in a tri club and you're like, oh my gosh, tell me everything. What was it? And then there's this kind of romantic idea. I remember the first time I really thought about Kona was I just signed up for Austria, I think. And I went, there was a storm and my tri club had a video session inside a sports hall and we all took our turbos and we set them up in the sports hall and there was a storm outside and we were watching this projection of a film. I can't remember what the film was, but it was all about the origin of Iron Man and how, you know, it was like a swimming club and a running club and they like battled it out and then they invented Iron Man and how it was in Hawaii. And I was like, this is insane. This is amazing. And then someone was like, that is Kona. That is the home of Iron Man. That is like the thing to do. And I was like, so cool. Wouldn't it be cool if I could do that one day? It's a shame I can't, you know, because I wouldn't ever get there. And when I looked into it and I found out that if you did 12 Ironmans, you could get a legacy slot. And immediately, as soon as I heard that, I was like, well, I'm doing it then. I knew that I was going to get that legacy slot because, yeah, I wanted it so bad. I wanted to go there.
So it was all down to like watching a video while you were doing a turbo session in a sports hall.
Yeah.
Wow. What year was this? How far back was it?
I think because I think it must have been really early 2019. So it was before COVID times. And it was the beginning of that year. We had a bad storm, I think in like January or something. Yeah. And then by that, and then I did my first Ironman. I signed up for it that year, but obviously it didn't happen. So,
so 5 years then from first finding out about Kona to yourself there. Wow, that's amazing. Like I remember seeing Kona for the first time. You won't remember this because I'm a lot older than you, but there used to be a Saturday morning TV show. It was on at about 8 o'clock, so we'd always watch it eating our Cocoa Pops in the morning, me and my brother, before my parents got up. It was called Trans World Sport, and they used to do, you know, all the traditional sports, but then have little sections on all the crazy sports around the world. And the way they filmed it was they started off explaining what Ironman Hawaii was, and then they filmed a bit of the swim, and then they went off to the football and the rugby, and then they came back and they had them going onto the bike, and then they went off and did some other stuff. And I remember thinking, like, this is mental. These guys, like, it seemed like a long time just for the hour program. They swam for a bit, then bike for a bit. And then you were like, my God, they've been on the bike for 5 hours or whatever, and now they're going on the marathon. It just seemed like this incredibly bonkers thing. But I totally get that idea of seeing something on a screen and going, that what people do this? That's crazy. Oh, wow.
I love a bit of craziness, yeah.
Yeah, man. So you qualified for Kona this year at Bolton.
Yes.
Which was early July, was it?
Yeah, July.
I don't want to give too much away here, but tell the listeners, if they don't know a lot about Ironman UK Bolton, what were some of the challenges of that course and that particular day in terms of qualifying as well?
I feel like I still have PTSD from that.
It was so dramatic,
the whole thing. Oh my goodness. I knew it was going to be hard. I went into it knowing it was going to be hard. I had absolutely no desire to do UK before I seriously considered I would go for Kona. And I thought, I want to give myself the best chance I possibly can. And UK was the option to go for. So I was like, well, I just have to be brave. Be a big girl. Go and do it. And it was so hard. And I don't want to put anyone off, but it's okay because it doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't matter. I could be honest.
That's how hard it was. They stopped doing it.
It was. My heart was just crazy the whole day. I was scared the whole day. It was really scary. And the lead up to, I wound myself up a bit worrying about it. The one thing that concerned me the most was the potholes and the quality of the road surface, because that's something that I can't control that. And so I went to visit the course. I don't usually do a course recce because I usually race abroad or somewhere I can't get to. But this time I was like, I really need to go and see what everyone talks about, how bad it is. And I did one loop and I was so freaked out by it. I thought, oh my goodness, I've kind of like erased some of the demons mentally, I guess, but it was so challenging and technical. The descents go into really sharp corners, going uphill all of a sudden. And my descending is not great at the best of times. I'm just a very anxious person. So I'm, you know, braking all the time and trying not to get hit by a car or something. And it was tough in that way. But when I actually got to the race, there were so many added factors that made it even more stressful. There was insane amount of wind that totally affected it in a way I had not anticipated. I mean, I don't like windy races at the best of time, but I've been lucky so far. This was on another level of crazy. The swim was in a lake, but I would have believed it was in the sea. It was so choppy. I was being swept up and slapped down on the water. I felt sick, like I was sea swimming. And I do a lot of sea swimming, so fine. Like, I'm used to it. But this was crazy, crazy. And the bike, the wind on the bike was terrifying. I actually screamed out loud several times. There was a bit where there was a pub at the top of a hill. And it was really nice because people would stand outside the pub and cheer you. And you'd be like, oh, that's so lovely. I want to acknowledge that they're cheering. So you'd sort of like go to look at them to say, thanks for cheering. And at that exact point, I passed the pub and there must have been a driveway and the wind just took me across the road and I was gone, like nearly into the side of the road. It was terrifying. So the whole time I was on edge, my hands were completely cramped up. Like I was... Yeah, it was insane.
it is hard to explain to people who weren't there that day. I mean, that it was even windier the day before. It was crazy when people were racking, wasn't it? But I remember going down to the lake's edge and looking and thinking, well, there is a solid foot of swell rolling across this lake for sure. It must have been 4, 6 or 7 water, and thinking, well, the wind surfers were launching from the sailing club across the lake the day before, and you could see them jumping and popping aerials and stuff. So it's seriously windy. But the UK bike course is so exposed, isn't it? So much of that is up on open moorland where the wind can really get a run at you. So yeah, very, very challenging conditions on what's already a very, very challenging course. Like you said, there's no free speed. In fact, it's the opposite of free speed. Yeah. You have to brake so much and lose all the speed on the downhills, on the sharp bends. And then the uphills are so steep, you can't build any momentum up. Were you questioning your life choices at this point?
Oh, totally. Totally. It was survival. It totally was survival. I look back at the photos and I don't know why I'm smiling in any of them, because I thought I was just in terror the whole time. I really was scared. It was frightening. And then to like make matters worse, I knew that I had to fix on my normalized power and get it down to, I was aiming for 150 and I could just see it climbing up and up. And I was thinking, I'm going to be exhausted. And then at one point, a race official came up beside me and there was a guy behind me. And the guy behind me said, "Oh, is everything all right? Are we going to make cutoff?" And I thought, cutoff? Like, I wasn't worried about cutoff. Why is he talking about cutoff?
Yeah.
And then I remembered vaguely seeing a sign saying that the road closed outside of where transition was shut at 4:30. And I thought, well, I've got to get back to that road before 4:30. And I thought, how long have I got? And I started doing all these calculations thinking I've lost so much more time than I would have expected just because it's so windy and intense. And yeah, it was mental. I mean, there's one road, I don't know what the roads are called, sorry. But it's like a sheer drop. It's like a roller coaster. You can't see the bottom of it. When you get to the top, it's like a... And this guy overtook me and he went down so fast. I actually like was scared for him. And then I caught him at the bottom and I overtook him on the next hill. And I was like, that was really scary. Don't do that. He was like, yeah, I'm really scared too.
Don't scare mummy. Don't run off. Yeah. Rewind a little bit then. This obviously Ironman UK wasn't your first one, but for people who've not heard your story before, how many have you done before and what sort of race experiences had you had before doing Ironman UK?
So now, as of like Kona, I've done five.
Right. So before you did UK, you'd already got three on the board then.
Yeah. So my very first was 2021, I guess. And that would have been Austria, that had been cancelled and then cancelled again and then cancelled again. So it was like the September. It was a really odd year because it was really quiet. There was only 1,000 people there, hardly any women. Everyone looked like a pro. It was terrifying, and I had no idea what to expect. So that was my first experience. And then I did Lakesman in the June or July the next year.
Yeah.
And then I did Portugal, which was amazing, in the October, because I had such a great time. I was like, let's do another one. And then it was the following July for Bolton, this July.
Yeah, so yeah,
I think it's like one every 5 months or something mad like that.
I think that helps paint the picture and give a bit of context to, I mean, imagine going to Bolton and it being your first Ironman on a day like that.
I really felt for those people.
Yeah. Or the people who turn up and it's their first ever triathlon and they're trying to do, it's just such
hard.
A challenge anyway, isn't it?
I think there was 650 first timers and only 800 people finished. So that just like, it's crazy stats from that race. I think there was 1,300 people entered, and 800 people finished. So it was a massive DNF rate.
Yeah.
And there was 120 women and 80 finished. So it's crazy.
Massive warm attrition, wasn't it?
I really felt, and like there was a guy at the swim start who saved my race for me because I dropped one of my earplugs in transition and I couldn't find it anywhere and I was freaking out because I need my earplugs to swim properly. Otherwise I just look like a drowning fish. And then he saw that I was like trying to get over it and he gave me his spares.
Oh, amazing.
He was so sweet, such a sweet guy. But yeah, I think he didn't finish either. And I'm like, oh, he saved my race.
He deserved it, didn't he? He deserved
to
finish. Bless him.
He did. Bless him.
Right. So here's my tip for anyone listening. Take spare earplugs with you. And also, if you've got an old spare pair of goggles, take those down to the swim start because always someone breaks the goggles and you can literally save someone's life with that old pair of goggles around your wrist. And if you don't need them, stick them on the floor as you go in.
Well, the irony was I had a spare pair of goggles that I nearly gave to someone. And I just didn't have the earplugs. I usually have them, but I didn't have them.
You can't have a spare every day, can you? But yeah. What happens if you don't wear earplugs? Does it affect your balance in the water and things like that?
It would ruin my day. Absolutely. Yeah. I literally have to plug everything. I have earplugs. Right. I have a nose plug. I have a massive goggles. So I look like a really strange woman. But they work because as soon as I get a bit of water, my stroke isn't very good because I'm compensating. I'm not rotating because I'm too worried about getting water in my ears. So I'll just think about it the whole time. And also if the water's a bit cold, although Bolton wasn't really an issue, but if the water's a bit cold, it can absolutely transform. If you're doing cold water swimming, if you've got earplugs in, it changes your life, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes a big, big difference. The temperature, not the temperature, but the way you feel the temperature, doesn't it?
It really does.
Yeah. Okay, good. So, massive thanks to that guy then who saved your race with a spare pair of earplugs. I'm sorry that you didn't get to finish, mate. Do you know his name?
I think his name's Stephen Dart and he's from Portsmouth Tri Club. So if anyone knows him, please come. Thank you. Thank you so much.
A pat on the back to Stephen. Stephen, if you're listening, send us an email. I'll send you a hat for saving Jesse's race. Right. So the big question then is, obviously you did make it to the bike cutoff, but how close was it when you actually got into transition? How close to the cutoff were you?
I actually don't think it was as close as I thought, as it felt. Because when I was on the run, I could see bikes coming in still. And I think I have a feeling that I knew I had an hour and I had 17K left to do. I probably had over an hour and I had 17K to do. So it was fine. I made it with like 45 minutes to spare, I think. So it was okay.
That's the thing though. The stress of the cutoff gets you in the middle of the bike leg. It's when you know that you're going to be okay, it kind of goes away. But there's a few hours in the middle there where that can be really, and I know I've spoken to people, especially first timers, who that's on their mind the whole time in training. It's on their mind all the way through the swim, all the way through the bike. It's just a constant worry, isn't it?
It's horrible. And especially with Bolton, because it's three laps and you know you're going to get slower every round. So you're like, oh no, it's going to take me even longer this time. It's going to take me even longer. Am I going to make it? And it's just an added stress that we didn't like.
And then the run?
By the time I got to the run, I was so tense from the bike ride. I think I wasted so much energy worrying the whole time and like holding onto my bike and not blowing away that the run wasn't what I wanted it to be. Mm. It felt really like just survival, really. The first lap was okay, but it wasn't the most interesting run.
Yeah.
But it was fine.
Yeah.
I felt very nauseous, actually. I do remember I felt sick. And then you told me why. And I didn't even realize why until later. But I felt like I needed electrolytes. And I took a Gatorade. And I shouldn't have done that. And my normal strategy is just to have Coke at every aid station. And I had salt tablets with me. And I do not know why I decided to pick up that Gatorade. But I did. And I drank it. And then I felt sick the whole time. And I couldn't have any Coke at all because I thought I was going to be sick. So I completely underfueled on that entirely.
Well, you did really well, I think, to get yourself to the finish line. It's a war of attrition at the best of times, but when you feel unwell, I think a lot of people at Bolton that day felt really sick on the run, and whether that's down to something that was in the water on the day.
The water was grim.
It didn't. Well, I think a big part of it is the weather conditions make the water look brown, right?
Yeah.
That's a big part of it mentally. And you're thinking to yourself, if you're getting into a chocolate box lake in Austria and it looks beautiful, you're kind of like in this, oh, this is such a healthy sport. I remember looking at the water the day before and thinking, yeah, it'd take a big check to get me into that water right now. And I think that does something mentally to you without the thought of whether there's goose poo in there or whatever it might be. But you did really well to get yourself to the finish line. You've got to put all thoughts aside of, like, I wanted the time to be X or Y. It's a big thing for a lot of athletes. Like, we put these targets on our race of what we want to do and what we should be able to do. And the reality is getting to the finish line is the win. Anything else is a massive bonus. And it's not like walking isn't failure. It's it's getting to the finish line is success and everything else. Yeah. Yeah. Everything else is hard.
I think having done five now and realizing how different each race is, like, and you all have your strengths and weaknesses, like mine is descending, apparently. And, you know, you can really see from my times, like, the races that I do well in are the ones that make me really happy.
Right.
And that's a massive deal for me. So, yeah, it's bolted definitely or didn't make me happy.
Do you know, I think that's such an important point, though. So many people don't realize that I think there were a small number of people who go well when they're angry and they go well when they're pissed off. And that kind of course works for them because I've heard people say, you know, I know if I'm suffering, other people are suffering more. And like, I respect people who have this attitude and can get through it. I'm just like you. If the sun's out and the sky's blue and I'm having a good time, everything's rosy. If I'm really in physical pain in the event already, and it's raining and I'm scared and I've had a puncture, I think it's so much harder to do well, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Are you trying to see the funny side? But yeah.
You chose this.
I think it's, like, why is there a sailing club at the top of a hill? I'll never understand that, you know?
Oh, dear. So you entered it, obviously, with the aim of, I want to go to Kona. The Women for Try initiative has got some extra Kona slots here. This is a really tactical advantage and opportunity. And again, I think for women in the UK, that was an amazing opportunity because so many people see traveling the channel as a barrier for whatever reason. They look at mainland Europe, but they won't travel to the UK for it. So I think that was a massive, massive opportunity. You're really smart for having taken it on. You're really brave for having taken it on because it's blooming difficult as well as a big challenge anyway. At what point did you realize you were going to get the slot, that you had the slot in the bag, or was it not a case of that?
I don't think I thought I had it necessarily in the bag because there were a lot of people in my age group who finished, and because of the slots roll down from oldest down to youngest, don't they? So when I got to the ceremony, I really hoped that I'd get the slot, but I kind of knew from when we got to the 40 to 45 category, I was like, okay, I think I might have a slot.
Yeah.
So that was exciting. Yeah. And then I ran up that stage so hard. I was like, yes, I'm going to sprint.
That's amazing. That's really good. Like, that's the story of it for me. That's the sitting and the waiting part. And the do you get to go? Do you get the, I think there's a, you know, it's great if someone's finished in the top three and qualifies, but the people who get the roll down slots, the people who, like you've said, you've wanted this thing for so long since you found out about it and you actually get to do it. When did it feel real to you?
Oh, I don't know. I guess when I had
the
ticket.
One thing, like, to go on the stage and get it, but
I think actually the moment that was like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize how bad I wanted it was at the ceremony for the award, for, you know, the slot roll down, they played a video of Kona and, like, had the traditional Hawaiian, like, singing and dancing, and, like, they showed the course and the people racing. And, like, I definitely got, like, really emotional because I thought, I didn't realize how bad I wanted this, but I want it so bad. And then, yeah, like, that bit really excited me. And then to finally have the ticket, I was like shaking, going, because I got a boarding pass to go. And it was like, oh my gosh.
Is that what it looks like? They give you is it like a boarding pass?
Yeah, I've got it.
Oh, amazing.
But yeah, it's like a little fake boarding pass with, like, ticket to Kona.
Oh, that's amazing.
And they give you a lei. So I've got my lei.
Go on, put that on for us. Yeah. You get to wear that for the rest of the, you know, come on, you're qualified. You've been. You get to wear it. That's eight. So mid July then is Kona. You've got what, two months maybe not even that before Kona.
Yeah,
it was early October, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's almost. Is it almost 3 months? Yeah, July, August, September.
Yeah,
yeah, right, 3 months. Yeah,
we are lost to the maths department over here.
I felt like it was the same gap as I had from Lakesman to Lakesman to Portugal. So I was confident that wouldn't be an issue. And actually, it's probably easier than having I had like a week or two downtime, and then I was like straight back on it. So it was a bit easier to just refocus. But it was so different, the mental state, because I had been freaking out about Bolton so much and just worrying about it all the time. And then to be like, well, I've made it, so I don't have to worry about it anymore. I can just enjoy these things. And suddenly it was so much easier to just go for a bike ride and just be like, yeah, I'm having a great time. I love being on my bike. I love going for a run. Oh, it's a 3-hour run. Sure, let's go and do it. It'll be fine. And yeah, all of a sudden, everything just became much more enjoyable. And I did miss the odd session, but I was like, I'm not worried about it because I've just done Bolton. So I know I'm ready. So it's fine.
Yeah. So for people who haven't ever been out to Kona, you know, they've maybe dreamed about going, how would you describe the experience of like going out to the island, the flight, the arrival there, the getting to the place? Sort of talk us through the picture bit before we talk about the race itself.
Oh my gosh, it is so amazing. It was like, I couldn't have dreamed how cool it would have been to go. And I think I was so lucky to have qualified in a year that it was just women, because there was, I mean, there was, it was special. It was really special. Really, I imagine it was very different to normal. It was like, unlike any race I've ever done before. My friend said it was like Ironman on crack. It was just insane. Getting there was, I mean, they say when you get off the plane, be prepared for the humidity. Humidity? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was like, oh, okay. I heat trained. So I was prepared for it. And I'm usually pretty good with extremes in temperature, whether it's like really cold or really hot. So I wasn't too worried about it. But yeah, it is an experience. The whole lifestyle is very different. Like, you get up at 5 a.m. in the morning and you are going swimming at 6 a.m. And then you are in bed by 9 o'clock because there is nothing there. So your whole thing is doing triathlon and experiencing Kona, and it is incredible. Yeah.
Did you get a sense there were like a larger proportion of female triathletes in the town than you might expect at a standard race? Was it very much the females taking over the town kind of feeling?
Well, there were a lot of blokes as well, but yeah, there was a huge amount of women, and it was just so supportive and amazing. Like, everywhere you went, there were people on the side, women on the side of the road, and they were like, oh my gosh, I love your hair. Oh my gosh, I love your outfit. Oh, I love this. Oh, where are you from? And it was just really nice. Everyone was so supportive and just lovely, absolutely lovely. I met people from all over the world. Weirdly, I kept meeting people who were from where I am, which is very bizarre.
Really?
Yeah, I met a lady who lived in Liverpool, but she came from where I live in Camberley. I was like, that's really weird. And I met a lady who lived in Australia, but she was from down the road as well. And I thought, this is bizarre. Yeah, every morning we would go swimming to the coffee boat. And my friends in triathlon have always talked about the coffee boat. Every race I've ever done, they've told me there's a coffee boat, and I've never found it. Never. I don't think it exists. I was like, there's no coffee boat. You're all lying. And they were like, no, the Kona coffee boat is a thing to get the Kona coffee. And it's run by Ironman and it's amazing. I was like, yeah, right. It's not going to be a thing. And every morning it was there. And we went and we swam out, and it was like coral underneath you. And you could see all like amazing tropical fish. And we'd swim out to the boat and then hang off of the gunwale and have a little coffee and chat to everyone around. And it was amazing.
So it is literally a boat that they make coffee on, like going to a coffee shop, but a boat half a mile out into
the sea.
But
you don't pay. Ironman paid for it.
Eat coffee. Oh, well, that makes it worth the price of admission alone, doesn't it?
Right. And then when you go out of the water, you got a free towel for doing it. So I was like, oh, this is great.
That is amazing. I love it. How long before the race were you out there?
I think I had 5 days.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I had 5 days, maybe four and a bit, because we got there in the evening.
Okay. And sort of, I'm looking for, I guess part of this is looking for tips for other people who are going to go in the future. Do you think that was long enough? I know you mentioned done heat acclimation before, and we'll talk about that. But do you think that was a good sort of balance between being there long enough and not being there too long?
I think it depends on the person, because I felt confident that 5 days would be enough for me. And I think 5 days was enough to, for quite a lot of the athletes who were there. But if you're someone who maybe is a bit more competitive and, you know, maybe it would be better to go out a bit earlier and just actually train in the heat, because by the time I got there, I was on taper, so I didn't have to do any hard sessions or anything. So it was fine. But if you're going to go a bit harder, maybe you want to experience that. But yeah, I thought for me, it was absolutely fine.
Yeah.
It's more the jet lag, I think. But yeah, it was getting over that.
And how long did it take you to adjust to that, to the time difference?
I think initially, I thought I'd be more worried about it than I was, because actually, for some strange reason, I was just getting up naturally at 4:30 in the morning, but then everyone got up at 5. So
right.
It was fine. It was like their hours are shifted anyway, because they tend to go out when the sun comes up at 5 and then go to bed at 9, because that's right. When the sun goes down. So it's kind of like a weird reverse party place.
And the time difference actually then works in your favor, because your body's waking at this time and that's when you need to be up bright. That's interesting for people to know, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. And then to go back a bit, you mentioned you'd done sort of heat acclimation and humidity acclimation. What did that look like in the last phases of your training in order to get ready for the heat and humidity out there?
So I did, I think it's called passive training, where I did like a run and then I'd run to the leisure center and get in the sauna for like 15 minutes. I didn't really train on the turbo before that. I was outside mostly. So, and it was getting a bit cold in the UK at that point. So yeah, everything I did was like, if I finished a bike ride, I'd get in a hot bath and just sit there.
Right.
For 20 minutes.
So a combination of getting in the sauna after running and getting in the hot bath after turboing or whatever, and just,
yeah.
I mean, you're playing this down. I've tried this and know how incredibly unpleasant it is.
It sounds like you just kind of took it. One time in the bath, I was like, I feel like it's just a bit fast.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. But did you feel as though it had made a positive difference when you got out there? What was your experience of like the heat and humidity and exercising in it when you got there?
It is a strange one, because actually I felt like it was fine, especially on the bike. I mean, you've read my race report, so you know what it was like on the bike, that it is so hot. I thought that the ground was going to swallow me up with lava. It was so hot. But saying that, it was all manageable. It was completely manageable. The thing that I didn't expect was when I got to the run on the actual race day, my heart rate was spiking really fast. Mm. And I could feel like my chest pounding and I was barely running. So I thought, okay, this is weird. I haven't experienced this before. So that was something that I hadn't encountered. And it did calm down after about 5K. But that was the only time I think the heat really affected me in a really scary way. But it was unbearably hot, but it was manageable.
Yeah.
For the most part. The side effects of the heat are more unpleasant than the actual oppressive feeling of the heat. Like your feet swelling up and my hands swelled up really bad. I had to loosen my watch on the run because my hand swelled up so much. Things like that, or like the physical burning of my skin from the sunburn was more unpleasant than the feeling hot.
Yeah. It's so hard, isn't it, to describe to people. I've been out to Hawaii, but not to do the Ironman. I was out there as a windsurfer, and it was so hard to describe to people the difference in how being in the sun feels out in Hawaii compared to being out in the sun. Anywhere else I've ever been, it just felt to me like the sun is this toxic ball of nuclear energy that is trying to incinerate me. It's the only way I could describe it. I've never been anywhere else where I would have long sleeves on all the time, and I wished I had like long lycra trousers on under my board shorts at the same time. It just felt
oppressive.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And so trying to just survive in that.
And it's kind of heavy when you breathe in, like it's heavy in your chest. Especially weirdly when the sun goes down in the evening, then the humidity gets crazy.
Yeah, you're right. That word heavy really describes how the air feels different somehow. It doesn't feel wet. It's not like you feel wet, but it feels, there's something different about it.
Right.
It's a ridiculous place to hold an Ironman when you
see it. It really is. It's the weirdest course ever.
Yeah. Right, let's talk about race day then. So you've done your swims in the run up to the event. Race day comes around. Talk us through the whole thing right from the start, right from waking up.
Okay, so I got up super early and I met up with, because I went out with a group of nine in my female friends. there were nine of us. And so I met up with my friend Ellen and we walked down Ali'i Drive down to the start line. And the hype was insane. Like they had the, what do they call the bleachers, beaches and a big screen and everything. And they were pumping out music. And yeah, it was like, I actually felt really emotional seeing that because it was like, oh my gosh, in quite a few hours, we're going to be running through here and that'll be it. That'll be like, we've done it. And hopefully. And so I think I did about 5K in steps. I swear, before the race even started, because you have to go through a process of you go around and you drop off your stuff and then you have to go and get your tattoos done. And they were obsessed with these tattoos. And I was so freaking out because they were just sliding off my skin. They did not want to stick. So I went around three times to get my tattoos put back on. And every time I came back, because I had the pink hair, they recognized me and they were like, oh, it's you again. I'm like, yeah, just give me a Sharpie, honestly. that was a bit traumatic because I thought I would be disqualified if I didn't have tattoos because they've got very different rules in America. Like you don't have to wear your bib in America on the bike, and that blew my mind. And then the tattoos were a whole thing, and I thought, oh my gosh, I don't want to get told off. I need to do it properly. And then I went around to transition, checked out my bike was okay. So many volunteers. I have never seen so many volunteers in my life. It was incredible. Like for every person, there was a volunteer or two people for you. So I had help finding a track pump to pump my tires up, sorted them all out in like seconds. So I didn't have to worry about that at all. And then I was like, well, I guess I'll just hang out here and eat something. So we were just sitting on the floor, chilling. So that was really nice. And then eventually I was like, well, I guess I'll go to my start pen then. And then the start was quite unusual because it was in age groups, which isn't normal. It's normally seeded by time on the swim. But it was actually quite nice because we got to like chill and hang out with people who, you know, were in my age group. And it was really nice. I met like a girl from Tennessee and I met a girl who'd come from, you know, across the world. And it was really nice just talking to them. You could tell the people who were like seriously into it because they were like focused and not talking to anyone. But I was like, hi, let's have a chat. And so we were all sitting on the floor and then they blew the conch shell and we could hear the crowd going wild and there were helicopters and all sorts of things. And we start shuffling towards the lake and the sea. And we were all like looking over the bay to see all the swimmers go out and the pros. And it was amazing. Just, yeah, the feeling is incredible. Yeah. And then eventually we got in the water.
Is it light at this point? Has the sun come up? Is it dawn still?
Yeah. The sun came up. Yeah. I can't remember at what point the sun came up because there were so many like lights because of we were by the finish line. So we were going through the finish to start the race. So it was a.
Yeah. And how was the swim for you?
The swim was good. I mean, I was a little worried about the swim because my swim times I felt like had been going down and Bolton was really not, it didn't change that much in my variation of swims that I've done on Ironman, but Bolton was definitely a slower side for me. This, I was not expecting anything great. And especially I didn't have a wetsuit because it was so hot and we had swim skins instead. And I tried it with a swim skin and I was like, I can never tell what my to a race day pace is going to be because it feels like there's just a switch on the day and you're like, oh yeah, this is a race now and I can do my thing and it works. So it was a good race actually because normally I'm worried about being hit or punched or dunked but actually it was very civilized, I have to say. Like I didn't get hit that much at all. Like the ladies weren't that frenzied. It was good. But I drafted next to a lady for a while And then I felt a bit weird that we were next to each other for so long. So I was like, I'm just going to leave. I'm just going to go over here because it got a bit weird.
And did you get to take in, you know, the fish and the turtles and things as you were swimming in the event? Or was it more about being in the race head?
So I was a bit disappointed because all the fish went away and there was no Nemo to find. There was no Dory. There was nothing. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll see a shark or a turtle. That would be really cool. Didn't see anything. And then the course is really simple. It's just a rectangle. When you get to the end, there's a big boat. And then the most exciting thing is that really, really far beneath you, there are loads of like divers. And that's really exciting because you're like, hey, hi, divers. And there was a guy free diving and he was so low. And I thought, oh my gosh, how is he not dying? That's amazing.
Wow. Yeah. All very distracting when you're trying to. When you're trying to put a decent swim together.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, why are they watching us now? Do they think there's sharks nearby or do they think we're cheating? Or
oh, I bet they were taking photos of you or something.
Probably. There is a scuba diving photo guy.
Yeah. So it sounds like it was a pretty cool experience.
It was cool, but it was very painful because I could feel my neck was completely red raw from the salt.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was.
It started already, had it?
It was so bad. I usually have like sensitive peach skin, but this was insane. It was just raw, absolutely raw all the way around.
What do you think was the difference on that day?
Maybe the salt, because I had practiced with lots of Vaseline and I do get a little bit of rubbing every now and again, but this was the whole way around and unavoidable. So I guess it was just the salt water was really abrasive. Maybe because it was hot, it was.
Was it moving against your swim skin?
Yeah, just around
right,
the back.
Right, okay. Yeah, oh, that's
it
hard.
It was like raw flesh out. And you go through a shower and I thought, I've got to get this salt off because if I'm going to sweat and it's going to drip down into my neck, it's going to hurt so much.
Yeah. Do you know, I think that's a really good tip for anyone going there is if you're doing a sea swim, just to spend 10 seconds underneath the hose pipes getting the salt washed off your skin because that will cake on your body. The water evaporates and you're left with salt there. And like, it can't be good for your dehydration having salt caked all over your skin, can it? In any way?
No.
I think 10 or 15 seconds there is time really well spent.
Yeah.
Exciting running around the pier? Because it's so iconic, isn't it, when you've watched it on the coverage, running around the pier and going to where the bikes are.
Yeah, I was a bit like concentrating so much on where my bike was though. Where is it? There's so many volunteers. It was insane. Yeah, it's really cool. And there's like a weird little like shack thing there with like a thatch roof and it's really cute. And you're like, oh, this is nice. Yeah.
All right, bike leg. This is where you traditionally come into your own, isn't it? Getting on the bike. How was the experience of riding through Kona then? Because you got a section through the town and then it's hard to describe, I think, how desolate the top end of that course is through there, because it really is a lava field, isn't it? You're really riding through a road that's been put over the top of what is still an active volcano.
Yeah, there is nothing. There is nothing on the Queen K. There is nothing. It was so funny because, well, so the first bit, you go around the town, it's great. You're like, victory lap, woohoo. And then you go up the hill and you're like, right, now we're on the Queen K. That is it. We're going across. Angry people in their cars held up, shouting at us. I was like, hey, sorry about that. Have a great day. Carried on. The lava fields are desolate. I really enjoyed the course. Like, I feel like the course itself was what is my thing. It's like gently undulating. People said it was windy. It was not windy compared to Bolton. It was nothing, like barely a twitch. It was absolutely fine. People said it was hilly. It wasn't hilly. It was just perfect. It was, you know, I can see in the distance. So the rolling hills don't really exist because you can see in the distance. And there were a couple of climbs that it wasn't that traumatic. The lava fields are quite desolate. There was one point where a woman was behind me and she was like, oh my gosh, a goat. And then everyone was like, oh, it's a goat. Because it was the most exciting thing we'd seen all day. That's probably says a lot about the race. Everyone was very excited when they saw a goat.
It's interesting, isn't it, that your perspective on the hills and the wind of Hawaii is tempered so much by your experience at Bolton and the fact that, I mean, there's a significant amount of climbing at Hawaii, but you didn't feel like it because it was so different to Bolton. And it's obviously it's windy there, but you didn't feel like it because it was so much less than compared to the race day at Bolton.
Definitely. Yeah, I really think Bolton put everything into perspective massively. Like,
that line about what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's one hill at the end. Well, there's probably quite a few, but the Harvey at the end.
Yeah.
And there you go up that and then turn around. And I was like, oh, okay, that was fine. It's not Leith. I'm happy.
So coming back into T2 and heading out on the run, is this about the point where you started to become aware of just how hot it was and how strong the sun was when you get off the bike and you're moving a lot slower?
So I was aware on the bike because my nutrition was Tailwind, and Tailwind has electrolytes in it, and I had pH chews, and I knew, like, about an hour and a half into the ride, I started getting a headache, and I was like, oh, that's very interesting. I wonder if I'm dehydrated. So I immediately switched to pH 1500, and the headache went immediately.
Right.
Like, immediately. It was crazy. And I was like, okay, that is what that is. I'll have to keep an eye on that. So unfortunately, I didn't need it again. So I think I managed that, the heat side, in that way, okay. But when I got to T2, I knew that I was really badly sunburned. Really, really bad. Because
what were you wearing? Was it like a sleeved tri-suit that came down?
It was short sleeve. And I'd bought like sun protection sleeves to ride on the bike with. But I didn't wear them because they'd made such a thing about these tattoos that I didn't feel like I should wear them, because I was freaking out that, like, they wouldn't let me do that. So I didn't wear them, which I really regret now, because I had the number sunburnt onto my arm. So it's still there.
Yeah.
And I could feel my skin bubbling. Like, it was gross. It was really gross. And I thought, oh man, that really hurts. And I hope it's not going to affect me later. I was really lucky it didn't. But when I got to T2, I was like, oh my gosh, this really is bad. And my neck was really bad from where I had had the friction burn. And then I'd worried that I hadn't put enough sun cream on there, because I guess you're leaning forward and the sun's on the back of your neck. And I thought, oh no, what if it's sunburn on top of chafe? That's really bad as well. Mm. So when I had a special cooling towel, and it's like a towel that you get wet and then you kind of snap it and it goes cold. And I had that to go around my neck as like a thing to maybe lower my temperature. But when I got it out of the bag at T2, it was like baking.
Right.
It was baking hot. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Because it's black and it had been sitting in a see-through bag. It was insane. So, like, as soon as I got to the first first aid station, I just had to, like, dunk it in the ice water with all the, like, cans of Coke and stuff, and put it on. And it was really tough, because I was like, I'm so sunburned, I don't know whether to wrap it around my arms or put it on the back of my neck, because it hurts so much. But I thought, I'll just keep it on the back of my neck, because I can't bear to put sun cream on that. And so I felt like if the towel was on there, at least it would give me some protection on the back of my neck.
Yeah.
That was pretty intense. And then, as soon as I set off, weirdly, there were no like, you know, when you go over from T2 into the run, there's like a mat that tells you, oh, you're now on the run. There was none of that. So I had no idea if I was on the run or not. So I was a good, like, half a kilometer in before I was like, oh, my watch, maybe I should start it on the run. So that was a bit weird.
Did you ever get to the bottom of whether they would have let you wear, like, the arm sleeves?
I think they would have let me, because there was a lady I spoke to and she had sleeves on her tri-suit, and she was like, oh, I didn't bother putting the tattoos on. And I was like,
so that might be something for other people who are considering going. So I'm thinking, like, for anyone who even mildly suffers in the sun, having white arm sleeves on, even if you sacrifice a pair and your magic marker, your number, the arm sleeves, anything that keeps that direct sunlight up. Yeah. It was a real bump.
I wish I had. Yeah. I really wish I had, because, yeah, it was crazy painful.
Yeah. Yeah, and even one of those little hats that's got like a dangly bit on the back that hangs down and covers your neck up would be gold for the run, wouldn't it? They don't look amazing.
Exactly. Makes it different. Well, the in Kona, especially, they're like really funny about the sun cream, which I hadn't really realized before I'd gone. You have to have a specific kind of sun cream to protect the coral.
Right.
And all of the sun cream I had from home wasn't allowed. And so when I put it on, when I went into transition T1 and I was like, I need sun cream. And this lovely volunteer covered me and it just slid off.
Right.
It just, it's not very absorbent.
Yeah.
It's literally a barrier. I think it's a mineral one. So yeah, I'd recommend anyone going to Kona as well, investigate what sun creams are available and practice with the right sun cream, because that will make a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Right, so you talked a little bit about the run already, about the funny high heart rate thing. What was your experience like on the run? How did you feel getting off the bike, apart from the, I think the worry of being very sunburned is quite disturbing, isn't it? But what kind of mental state were you in at that point, Jess?
I felt good, because I knew, like, I just had to survive the run now, because the bike was well within cutoff. And a lot of people talk about the run and how crazy it is. Like, I met a lady on a sportive I did a few weeks before, and she'd been to Kona. She told me how her shoes melted to the floor when she stopped at an aid station. I thought, what? Your shoes melted? That's not normal. So yeah. I was a bit scared. But, you know, you just got to get through it. And the first bit's great, because you're going through the town. I saw my friends from Stop the Pedal passing me and I waved to them. That was really good. And there were some really sweet local people cheering and it was lovely. And then you get to, what is it, like 10K? And you go up that hill onto the Queen K and it is a different race entirely.
Yeah.
It's so lonely. It is crazy, crazy. It's really hard to describe, because you're just basically running on a motorway and that is it. And there's no one other than the people around you, which actually there were quite a few people, but you know what I mean? Like
it was basically just a 10 mile straight shot out to the energy lab, turn around and come back again. And
yeah,
no one out there the whole time.
Yeah, it was. And it is undulating. It's not flat. Like it feels on the bike flat, because I guess you're going faster, but when you're running it, it is a lot more hilly than you think. And there's no supporters unless they're at the aid stations. No one's allowed out there. So it's pretty dire. But it was going out there. It was hot. But then when I got to the energy lab, the sun went down. As I arrived, it said like, welcome to, you've arrived at the energy lab. I was like, oh, that's cool. And you go down a hill. The energy lab, if no one knows what it is, it's just, I think it's just a car park. It's a car park, right?
I think they do all kinds of like solar, or certainly back in the day, it was like a solar energy production plant.
Oh, okay.
Like, whether it still is or not, I don't know, but that's
I feel like it's 100% there for. Some kind of like botanical garden now. Or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, okay.
It's literally the car park for the botanical gardens or something.
Right.
You run down
road downhill,
yeah,
and come back up again.
But it was quite cool, because when I got there, it was like, welcome. And then I turned the corner and there were people running towards me because it's out and back. And I was going down the hill. And as I was going down the hill, I was facing the sea.
Yeah.
And the sun was setting right in front of me.
Oh, amazing.
Like, massive orb of gold. And it was crazy beautiful. So I wasn't thinking about anything. And up to that point, I'd been like roughly doing 9.1, because I needed more walk breaks on the hills and stuff. So I was taking it pretty casually. And then I felt like, oh, it's all downhill. I'm just going to run it. So I was like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to take this opportunity whilst I'm really happy to keep going. And the sunset was in, I can't describe how beautiful it was. It was amazing. I was like, yeah, this is amazing. And I got to the bottom of the hill and the sun was gone. I was like, oh, it's kind of painful again.
A long, dark run back again.
Yeah. Well, there was, they had like the Red Bull area down there at the very bottom, and the sun went down and then it was like a weird rave. and they had these really young teenagers like dancing with cans of Red Bull and yeah, it's okay. And there's like a DJ deck. Really into it.
Yeah.
Bless them. That's nice. But everyone is so focused on getting the, what's it called? The special needs bags.
Do you remember me warning you we were going to get a visit from Ruby?
I know.
Come here, say hello to everyone. Come here. You start shouting in the middle of the interview. Here she is. Look, say hello. Now, go away.
What?
No. We're so professional here. I've got to get a lock on that door to stop her getting in. Oh, dear. Right. So talk us through the home straight then. You've done all the hard work.
So the coming back from the energy lab was definitely the hardest bit.
Yeah.
Because the sun was, once the sun goes down, it is pitch black. You can't see anything. I'd been warned about it and I took a head torch with me and I didn't get it out at all. Because I thought it was more exciting running in the dark and not knowing if I was going to trip over something than it was to be able to see where I was going. So that was more fun. So I was relying on the person in front of me's torch, which was like, oh, I'm going to catch up to them so I can see the ground. And I only like ran into a tree or something once, so it was fine. But yeah, it was good. That's a little bit of excitement that I created to relieve the monotony.
Love it. I love it. And the finish line experience, how was that for you?
It was good. It was good. I didn't get it out, so I was happy. I had like a strategy where I had like handfuls of ice and I put my ice in one pocket and the head torch was in the other pocket and then ice down the front, ice down the back, everywhere ice. And my shoes were sloshing so I could hear myself coming in the dark. Great. Oh, something you'll love this. So, you know, I said that I forgot my earplugs, my spare earplugs at Bolton. I ran the entire of Kona with spare earplugs in my bra and a spare nose plug because I really wanted to make sure I had them. So I put them in my bra as well as wearing a set. And then when I got to the run, I just forgot that they were in there. So, yeah, they were all just like in there with the ice and everything.
I thought you were going to say you did the whole of Ironman Hawaii with your earplugs still in. So
I did do the bit of the bike with the earplugs in. And then I was like, sounds really weird. I should, what's that? Oh, my earplugs is fine.
Oh, crikey, Jess. So you did it then. You did Ironman Hawaii. So 5 years in the making from first finding out about this amazing event, crossing the finish line. I'm interested in people's reaction to you when you got back. The people who were at the Tri Club who would have been around when you first went down as a total newbie. How's people's reactions to you been?
It's been amazing. Like, everyone's so lovely. Like, all my work colleagues, they made me a cake before I went. And it was always the big hype of, because I knew that's what I wanted to do since, you know, ages. And everyone in the club, all my friends, like especially my friends at the lake and my friends Sue and Sasha and Max, they are just so lovely. Like, they gave me all cards and it's incredible. I've loved it. And then my lake that I go to, there's a group of us who are all cold water swimmers and they made me a special t-shirt. So I'm now an iron frosty beaver, which is very sweet.
Wait a minute. Your cold water, open water swimmers are called the frosty beavers.
Frosty beavers.
That's quite something.
Yeah, I've got the t-shirt on. Wait. You have to excuse me. There we go.
There you go. A little.
Oh, there we go.
That's amazing. Oh, my partner met some ladies who were part of a cold water, open water swimming group the other day that were called the Blue Tits. So.
Oh, yeah, the Blue Tits.
Have you heard of them? Are you a rival gang? Do you get together?
I'm in the Blue Tits, but I've never actually made it to a meetup yet.
Oh, that's amazing. All right, listen, to wrap this up, Jess, what advice would you give to anyone out there who's in the same position you were a few years ago, dreaming about qualifying for Kona? Maybe they're even in exactly the same position and they haven't even done their first Ironman yet. What would you say to either them or the you from 5 years ago setting out on this path?
Well, I definitely say, don't worry about what other people tell you about how you should be doing your qualification process. Like, I got a lot of, not stick, but like there was a lot of stuff about the women having their own race and it being unfair that, you know, people who weren't elite going to race Kona, and a lot of people I know hesitated to take their slots. And I think that's just terrible. Like, if you want to go, go. Don't, it doesn't matter if, you know, it took you 17 hours to qualify, just do it, because you have to do your race your way. And don't let anyone make you feel guilty for what you're doing. You're just doing you. So I definitely say that, because I think that's a massive thing, especially for women. We tend to doubt ourselves. But I think this kind of proved it, because it was like a record-breaking year. So
Yeah. Do you know, it reminds me a lot of the whole woman's hour thing on the radio, where you'll get people saying, well, why do they have a woman's hour? Why is it? Because the other 23 are men's hours. This is how equality works, isn't it? You have to get more women to Kona to inspire more women they can go to Kona before more women will believe they can go to Kona. That's what has to happen. And I think your example of this is so good, that you had the bravery to say, screw everyone who says, you know, any of the naysayers, I'm going to go because it's been my dream. And now, hopefully here in this, you'll inspire tens of thousands of women who want to go and do it, to go and be able to do it.
Yeah, ladies, go and do it. Go and do it. Just go for it. Yeah, it's incredible. And, you know, I thought I would be really self-conscious and doubt myself when I was out there, because I felt like I needed to feel like I didn't deserve to be there. Yeah. But I never felt that the whole time I was there. I felt completely in the right place. And everyone was so welcoming. And, you know, they don't care if you qualified in a 16-hour race or if you qualified in a 9-hour race. They're just all in awe of you for being there anyway, and just enjoy that experience.
Yeah, brilliant. Hey, well, listen, we're really proud of you. I think back to the you from 2019, and I think if we could sit down with her and say, do you know what, in 5 years you're going to have done 5 Ironman, you're going to have been to Hawaii, yeah, I think that person from 5 years ago would be pretty chuffed at that, Jess.
I think she would. Yeah. I think she'd be freaking out.
Oh, do you know, I think that's a good place to wrap this up. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for coming on and telling us all about it. It's been fantastic. And on a personal level, it's great to see you live your dream and get to the point where you can do that thing you've dreamt of for so long and wear the Hawaiian lei with pride. Is that the medal in the background that I can see?
It is. There when
you bring it over and show it to people in front of the camera.
It's so hefty.
Yeah, that's amazing.
My dodgy nails are still on. It's got engraved on the back.
Love it. Well, anyone out there sitting and watching that and thinking they'd like one, then they know what they've got to do now. They've got to put themselves out on one side and go and get it. Absolutely.
Go get it.
Thanks so much, Jess.
Thank you.
Right. You've heard Jess talk today about the importance of precision fuel and hydration, and how dehydration headache was coming on. The PFH 1500s took it away. If you're interested in getting yourself some, you can get 15% off your first electrolyte order using the code OA23 at precisionfuelandhydration.com. I encourage you to head over and use their free fuel and hydration planning tool. You'll get your own personalized strategy for your next race, and the planner will help you understand your own carbohydrate, electrolyte, and fluid needs, so you can refine your strategy in training and then nail it on race day, just like Jessie did. Well done, Jess. And over at teamoxygenetic.com, I think we've got the most comprehensive endurance sports coaching program for busy age groupers. If you're thinking about getting some coaching, don't hesitate. Book a call with us and come and have a chat, and we can see how we can help you have your next season be the best one you can possibly have in triathlon. There's a link in the show notes that just books through to my calendar, and we can have a chat. All right, guys, so remember, there's links in the show notes so you don't have to remember them. Until next week, have a great, safe training and racing week. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Podcast.